Fashion show, fashion show, fashion show at lunch. Fashion show at lunch.
Okay.
I love a good lunchtime fashion show.
Me too. And I just imagine, like, Mindy Kaling has talked before about how if we had done the show today, she would love to write about, like, what Michael's thoughts are on things like, I don't know, just modern culture. And so if I saw this show as in modern times, I could totally see Kelly, like, going to Spotify or some other thing and playing some, like, ridiculous song to, like, that would be for a fashion show. And she'd be playing it from her phone, like, in the break room and trying to make Pam, like, walk down the aisle and show off her stuff. And that's hilarious to me.
A lot of tweets have been going around, too, about Steve Carell saying how The Office would not work these days. You see that? I keep getting links to that. People keep showing it around. And it's totally true. Oh, I have something before we get into the episode. I saw The Office musical last night.
Okay, so I saw a photo. I'll have to link it in the show notes. I saw a photo on Instagram, and I was, of course, immediately jealous. You talked about this. Tell me about it. Like, what was going on? What was it like?
Great. It was a total fan fest. Like, it was really, really campy, okay. But it was great because
I feel like the only way you could do it is to be really campy.
Yeah, exactly. And I liked it because they didn't just try and recreate The Office. Like, they had those parts, but they also would, like, instead of calling the character Kelly, they kept calling her Mindy Kaling, which was really funny. They sometimes would throw out the names of the actors instead of the character name, and they would make jokes about the show, like about how Karen's only there to throw a wrench between Jim and Pam. And, you know, there's all these little, like, things that they would put in that were obvious, like, pulling you out of the story that they were telling of The Office. So it was like a retelling of The Office, but from a super fan's perspective of joking about The Office with musical numbers.
Oh, wow.
And dancing.
And dancing. Oh,
and
my
Michael
God.
Scott was played by a woman, and it was great. And multiple characters were played by single people. So that was really fun. So, like, Kevin, Meredith, and Phyllis were all one person, and then pretty much every racially diverse character was one other person who was really, really good. And that was kind of the funny part, was like, hey, you're not white, you get to play all the non-white people.
Your superpower.
but it was really funny. So I really, really enjoyed it. I thought the actors were really good. I mean, New York has just such a, as a friend said, a very deep pool of talent. So the singing was great and the acting was really good. Like, it was super goofy. I highly recommend it to anyone who's in New York and a super fan of the show, because it was really, really fun. Very small theater. I was in the front row, and the actors are, like, right on top of you.
That's awesome.
It was good. You should totally see it.
Oh, I'm jealous. That's exciting.
I just really hope that the actors were as like, it seems like they were as super fans as everyone else, or they just, like, got the role and kind of watched the show. I don't know what their story is. So I just kind of hope that in their hearts, they're as super fans as we are.
Yeah, that's you want that. And to go out for what would otherwise be sort of like an experimental role, you know what I mean? Like, that's the, if you're just a stranger to the show and it's like, oh, I see there's a casting call for this very strange thing. If you're not into The Office, I want to hope that, you know, as people that saw that, like, oh yes, I finally get to live out my, like, passion of being in The Office.
Well, you can definitely tell they watched the show at least once to play it. Oh man, the guy who played Jim and Andy, his Andy was so good. Oh my gosh, it was so good. Oh, there was so much ra-da-da-da-do. And he played the banjo. Like, he played it really well. Yeah, it was great. Anyway,
West Virginia, Mountain Mama.
Or you could, if you're just curious and you're not in New York, they do have an Instagram page. You can go check it out. I think it's The Office Musical on Instagram. So
I'm doing that today. There goes the rest of my day. We should probably talk about The Coup.
We should. We should.
This is a fun, I probably say that every time. This is season 3, episode 3. It aired in October, on October 5th, 2006. This is The Coup, and it was written by Toby Flinderson. Paul Lieberstein wrote this episode.
Toby.
This is a great episode, like, filled with iconic moments.
Yes. And, but it went by really fast for me. Like, it was a really, it wasn't a deep episode. I found myself writing very few notes down while watching it.
Yeah.
Because it kind of just happens to you. And it's a pivotal moment in Office timeline. Mm-hmm. But not a lot happens.
No. We do see Dwight just inhale a breakfast, which is uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty good moment.
That's like in my head. I can't not see how he just destroys some pancakes. But that's not really the point.
But it kind of starts with I guess we should talk about the cold open a little bit, which it wasn't really a cold open because it kind of feeds into the main plot of the show in that Michael decides to have movie time and Pam goes out with all this popcorn and she explains how, as like many things with Michael, including his nicknames for people and various things, they kind of it snowballs into something much larger than it started off as, like a training video kind of snowballed into movie time for a half hour every Monday. Movie Monday.
And I love that it's like we've watched the same episode of Entourage. And also, I don't understand why, but it defies reason why at the beginning Michael like is whispering in front of the popcorn, but it almost like, I know this is such a small thing, but he's like, I'm hungry, and is waiting for the popcorn to pop. But I almost get it because I think that I've like whispered in front of a microwave before, which I know is like, it's just a very strange thing to recognize, but it just doesn't make sense. But then you think about like, the microwave running and like the little kernels popping in it, and you just almost have to whisper around popcorn in the microwave. I don't know.
Very strange. Well, that's like one of those little human connections, right? Like someone who's done something like that, you see yourself in these characters, and it's that just gives you a little extra element of delight.
It's like, yes, these are real people. Not really, but they feel real, and that's fun. You can't watch movies during work.
Yep.
And
because you're gonna get caught.
You will.
Jan comes.
Sometimes Jan likes to pop in and make sure things are unannounced, make sure things are going the way that they should. And they're never going the way that they should.
Yeah, I think it's really funny that Angela is the only one not in watching the movie because Angela does not approve, which is, of course, perfect. Like, of everybody to not join in, Angela is the perfect one.
Yeah, and what I like is that this is one of those moments where you see the like loyalties and connections of Dwight are really well established, I think, in this episode. Mm-hmm. And the way that he's sort of facing two huge forces in his life, one being Michael and the other one being Angela, and how he sort of has to navigate the space between those two characters. And we see Angela kind of being the guiding hand behind Dwight's like power, which is kind of interesting and fun.
She's the what's that line from My Big Fat Greek Wedding? It's like the man may be the head of the house, but the woman, she is the neck, and she turns the head any way she wants.
Ooh, I like that. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, you're missing out. Anyway, Angela's definitely the neck. She's in this situation neck, where she is manipulating Dwight to she's focusing on his ego and his need for power and being whispering in his ear like like the Sith Kermit the Frog in the mirror, right? Like,
yes,
you will. You should run the branch. Yes, I should. That should be you. You're not a fool.
Like, oh, I love that. So we see then Jan get annoyed with Michael because he gets a talking to because he's watching movies during work instead of working. But what's so funny to me is like when he sees Jan. Well, okay, I'm curious about your interpretation of this, because for me, when he sees Jan, he doesn't get it. Like, he's just like, oh, hi, Jan, as if it's just okay that mm-hmm. he's watching movies. That's my interpretation, but I could also see someone interpreting it as him trying to play it off like it's no big deal. But to me, I don't think it's that. I think that he honestly, genuinely doesn't see a problem with watching movies during work.
No, I completely agree with you. He was just way too calm about it. He had no hesitation at all. He was just like, oh, hey, Jan.
Yeah, almost. Like, yeah, excited to invite her in to be part of the experience.
Either. He didn't feel guilty at all in that moment because he didn't even know that he was doing anything wrong. So there was no feeling of guilt whatsoever. And it wasn't until that she was kind of yelling at him in his office, not kind of, she was yelling at him in his office, that he kind of started scrambling for excuses.
Yes. And this is interesting because this is sort of the first in a while, I think, real recurrence of the possibility of branches closing. Mm-hmm. Angela is essentially like, hey, dummy, to Dwight, if you don't help us, you know, be better because Michael won't, then we may lose our jobs and we don't need that to happen. And so she's sort of putting into Dwight's head that this is a big deal. This is a turning point. And if we don't stop Michael, then we're not going to have jobs anymore. So what do we do about it? And Dwight decides to call up Jan on her phone.
Which he was previously told to not do anymore.
Yeah. You may remember when he had tried to get Jim fired. Yep. And she said, don't ever call me on my cell phone. But
I love the scene where he's agonizing over it in the parking lot and he ends up squatting down between these cars, like right next to the bushes. And there's like this great camera angle with like this really shallow depth of field that's like focusing in on him. And he's trying to hide, but obviously he didn't turn his mic down or anything. He's just like trying to physically hide. And so I find that really funny. His, and then he's just getting so trying to pump himself up in the parking lot. And we've seen him, we will see him do it more. And we've seen him do that kind of move.
Yeah.
There's various times that Dwight's trying to pump himself up and psych himself up to do something. And I like that Dwight. I like that side of him. It's just so animated and wonderful.
Yeah, he's very gestural and it's fun to see Dwight sort of, I think that doesn't go with his more, I don't know, he's typically like rigid, I guess is the word. Mm-hmm. So Dwight knows a lot of things about Jan, which is kind of creepy, but I love this conversation. There is a Liz Claiborne outlet. I will meet you there. And he knows exactly like what she wants.
How do you know I like that store?
Many of your blouses are Claiborne's.
How do you know that?
It's part of my job.
No, it's not. It's officially not.
Noted.
I love Jan's reaction to this because at first she's like, wait, what? And then she's like,
where is
actually,
it?
I do really like, yeah, where is it? I know you like their earrings, right? Like, I love that she feeds into it a little bit in her Jan way, where it's completely, it's still totally cold, but she actually is interested in checking out those stores. And I understand that. It's like the rage mixed with the, all right, tell me where
darn
it is.
Darn it, like you did get me. It's
you
almost
got
like,
me.
Dwight, you got me.
But she's way too corporate and serious and cold to ever let that break through. But she still does in her Jan way. And I really love that. So in this episode, we see them procrastinating a lot in the office from the whole movie thing. And that kind of starts things off. But we also see the other branch now that we have kind of our eyes over in Stanford because Jim's over there. We see them procrastinating too. They're just doing it with a video game.
Yeah. And it's like, there's something about the way that Michael procrastinates that it's innocent and kind of funny and sort of like tangentially related to work. But this is just so, it's just so bizarre and so on its face, so wrong, I guess, that it defies logic for me. Like it makes sense in the show and I think it's hilarious, but it's not at all a real thing, I guess. I don't get it. It's not something that you should be doing during work. And I feel like everybody gets that because I would never, I don't know of any like HR program that has ever used a war game where you literally shoot people as a way to do team building exercises. So there's no way that this has like come from HR. And instead, they're just like, they all like this game and want to play it together. And so they use work time to do it. And I guess it shows like Dunder Mifflin across the board, no matter who it is, like everybody's procrastinating, everybody's doing things other than work. And it's like, I think maybe they work too many hours if they have all this time to do these things and Stamford is still doing okay.
Well, it's just like any business job like that, like these office jobs, there's only so many hours of like real actual work and the rest of it is a running out the clock situation. Like
very good. I like that.
Because it is like, that's what it's like. I like the contrast between Scranton and Stamford here, because like you, just like you said, Scranton feels more innocent, where Stamford, their activity feels much more aggressive.
Yeah. It's very bro-y.
Yeah, it's very bro-y. And that is kind of a testament to the two bosses, right? Like,
ooh, I like that. It's themed after the bosses.
Yeah, because, and that's who is essentially the leader of these ships, right? So you have Michael, who is kind of goofy and fairly innocent and will do these activities that are more lighthearted, even though they end up getting sometimes eye-rolly and cringy and how he is. But in general, he is a more G-rated character.
Yes.
You know, I shouldn't say G-rated because, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, PG.
But
yeah.
He's goofy.
He's
right?
Softer.
He's a lovable goof. And then you see Josh over in Stamford, and he is much more of the bro, you know, more video games, more aggressive, more business, more tall and handsome and suits and, you know, like...
I'm sorry. I need you to come up with a descriptor for everybody that I've ever known. Tall and handsome and suits. That's just so good.
Beardy. No. But so that's who we're seeing on one side. And it made me think, I'm going to bring this up now because this is where my train of thought was going while I was watching this episode. When we had that big Andy discussion on the previous episode.
Oh, okay.
And we know that Andy gets ahead by, as he says later on, personality mirroring. Right now, ooh, Andy is working under Josh and he is acting like the bro-y broster.
Oh my God.
That Josh is.
Oh, wow.
And later on, he's working under Michael Scott, who is more of the goof, right? Like, and then that's why we see two different Andys, essentially, because and that comes out a lot in this episode, is what made me think of it, of the way when they get called in for the team, you think it's going to be something about business related or Dunder Mifflin related. And it ends up being about the video game when Josh is like, all right, we got to get a strategy. And then they start yelling, come on, right? Like all that.
Oh, my God. You're so
like that
right.
Masculine aggression. And that's the way Andy reacts, right? He's acting just like the way Josh is acting.
I love this.
And he takes it too far, but he's still mirroring that attitude.
This is perfect. Yes,
there it is.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Wow, you've solved the Andy conundrum for me. This is
so good. So Andy's consistent. He's consistently inconsistent because he's always mirroring his superior.
Yeah. Superior mirroring. Mm-hmm. Wow, I'll try to say that four times fast.
Blah, blah, blah.
Tall, handsome, suits. So yes, they're playing the game. Jim is terrible, terrible, terrible at it. And
yeah. I like seeing Jim being bad at something.
Me too. And like sort of not fitting in.
It makes him down to earth. It makes him real.
Yes, it does. And it's also like a wink at how well he fits in with the Scranton crew, mm-hmm, where he doesn't fit as well in with the Stamford crew.
Even though it looks like he should fit with the Stamford crew, it's almost like he's the goofy goof underneath his handsome suits.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and then so it's like he doesn't quite fit in Stamford.
Yeah,
and
sort
he
of
also
like,
doesn't quite fit in Scranton either in a different kind of way, you know?
That's true.
But I think he fits more in Scranton.
I agree. Definitely, he's more Scranton than Stanford. And now I've just had this idea that it'd be really fun. You know how people who are like super into Harry Potter, they
Pick their houses.
Yeah, they pick their houses.
You'd pick your branch.
You pick your branch. I think we need to we're gonna need to put together together we will put together the different branches to define the
personality types. Yes. Okay, I'm putting that in the good idea folder.
Perfect.
I'm 100% I'm on this train with you. I'm
excellent. Choo choo, we are taking off. Next stop, Goo Gamunga.
Dunder Mifflin branch houses.
Fun. All right, so let's talk about, well, if you want to, we should talk about the fashion show. Fashion
yes!
show.
Fashion show at lunch.
Fashion show. Fashion show. Fashion show at lunch. Fashion show. Fashion show at lunch. Fashion show. Fashion show. Fashion show at lunch.
It just fits in. It just fits in. And every time someone gets a new outfit, fashion show at lunch. Like, that's what it is. And I really like this little interaction between Kelly and Pam, because we did previously see her setting Pam up on a date, or they went on a double date together.
Yeah.
And so it's like I don't know if Pam's trying to become a little bit more Kelly because now she's single.
Single, ready to mingle, and Kelly's fun, and yeah.
Yeah, Kelly's like the young single person in the office that she could possibly relate to. So I think she's trying that on to see like, how am I single? Because she doesn't know.
Yeah, how do I do single?
Yeah, she doesn't know how to navigate this world herself anymore. So she's trying different things on, like she's trying on the new clothes.
Clever. And I like how Kelly is sort of helping her, because you can sort of see it as, Pam is doing this new thing and she feels like she needs a guide, and it's fun to have help with that and figure that all out. And
yeah, it's a nice little girlfriend moment. You know?
And Kelly's not, I don't typically see Kelly. Kelly's like more for herself on the face of her character. And so to see her be sort of more open and helpful with Pam, I think is really sweet.
And I feel like everyone needs that like surfacey friend that is like, that they can be deeper, but then you can enjoy the surfacey things with them. Like, fun clothes or shopping or, having some wine together and watching cheesy TV, everyone needs that kind of really lighthearted friendship with somebody.
It doesn't have to be like super deep. And can we too talk about Kelly's savage owning of Roy? Cause Roy comes in and is talking, sees that Pam's in these new clothes that she's fashion showing. Mm-hmm. And Roy comes in and Kelly, she says something like, isn't that like your third drink for the day or something? Cause he's like been coming upstairs so much. And it's just like this awkward, silent moment. And I'm like, yes, Kelly, own him.
That was definitely a yas. Like, she did. She very much called him out. And I think that this is the beginning of, we're seeing a Kelly character evolve from the quiet, almost nothing in the first season, they had her totally differently dressed and acting like a different person, essentially. And then now her character is developing. And now we're starting to see the sass a little bit of Kelly and her, where she can be quick and notice things. And because we see that later on develop, and there is that side of her. She's not just a dum-dum. She notices and observes things when she needs to, and she will certainly point it out.
She she absolutely will. And we see just more shaping, I think, overall.
Mm-hmm.
So despite being kind of a short episode, there are like three plots here, because there's like I think this is very C plot, like what's going on with Pam. It's just very in the office. Mm-hmm. But then we have Dwight going off and doing his thing, and we have what's going on in Stamford. And it's interesting how these episodes have to be shot and filmed and done because of the fact that it's all over the place. And we've got, Jim off on another place.
This is very much a little like little of this, little of that, little of this. But let's get to the meat of the episode when Dwight betrays Michael. And so after his meeting with Jan calls up Michael and tips him off to one of your employees is out of control and trying to take over the branch. He's you know, starting a coup, aka the title of this episode.
And he's so innocent about it. He's so innocent about it. Cause as she's talking to him and explaining it, Michael's like, oh, you had to go to the dentist today? And it's like, Michael, you don't get it.
Well, he couldn't even imagine Dwight betraying him, right? Like, I wrote
Which
that down.
So
I was like, he trusts Dwight so much. Even when Dwight was saying, oh, I have to go to a new dentist, it's really far away, he's like, oh, okay, buddy, have a good, you know, like, yeah, go
so
do what you gotta do.
Like, about it.
Dwight feels like he's betraying Michael at that point and being cagey about it. But Michael doesn't see anything different or wrong at all, because he would never think that Dwight would do anything at all like this. Like, he just inherently trusts him as, you know, kind of his number two. And we see this wonderful back and forth between the two of them as Michael is trying to play it cool and not divulge that he knows to Dwight when Dwight comes back from the dentist, quote unquote. The two fools trying to outsmart each other was so good.
It's excellent.
I love this scene between them.
Sounds like a good dentist.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name?
Crentist.
Your dentist's name is Crentist. Huh. Sounds a lot like dentist.
Maybe that's why he became a dentist.
They're both trying to think on their feet and coming up with goofy things like Crentist. It kills me. And that has become one of the family lexicon things in my household, is certainly Crentist.
Crentist. Maybe that's why he became a dentist. Yes. Yes, it is. It is exactly why he became a dentist.
Oh, that is just such a good scene. And then following that up, Michael keeps it going and decides to announce to the entire office that Dwight is taking over. And again, we get our favorite thing about the office, everyone's little comments, you know, both in confessionals and out in the workroom. And we get a wonderful, wonderful little thing from Stanley about how can't possibly that's all it takes to run an office.
But why Dwight?
Because Dwight never lies.
How does that qualify him to run a branch?
Because that's all it takes.
Oh, Stanley.
Oh, yeah. Just all those comments make it just so delightful. And they try and derail Michael again.
Yeah, it's... Oh, golly. I, again, despite having like three layered things, this episode does go fast. And I think that's because there are a lot of laughs. And like mm-hmm. I said, they're just... I think the show in general has a lot of iconic moments. And obviously, for those of us who are like super into it, there's so much quotable stuff. But this episode in particular has so much like crunchy content that you get mm-hmm. to share around with people that I really enjoy. I enjoy seeing, you know, that the way that the writers work mm-hmm. throughout this whole thing.
Well, Dwight's power goes to his head really, really quickly, and Michael just can't possibly keep it in any longer because Mike Dwight commits the ultimate faux pas of insulting the Sebring.
That's my car. That's my car. He's so upset about it, so angry, so just taken aback. How could you? He's just pained. How could you, Dwight? How could you?
Well, because Michael prides himself so much on the things that he's achieved and the things he has and seeming like the cool kid, that when the one person that gave him unconditional cool kid feelings all of a sudden turns on him, he loses it.
Oh, this is visceral and painful and so tough to watch, because the way that Rainn Wilson grovels as Dwight Schrute is just beyond. I mean, he's like snotting everywhere.
Oh, it's so gross.
It's disgusting and perfect.
And everyone's face, and the little shots of everyone's reactions in the office, they're just all staring blankly at just...
I saw that, I would be so disgusted. Because I'm not just talking about the snotting, I'm talking about the whole thing, like the groveling, all of it. And that's got to be so against what Angela thinks mm-hmm. is, you know, like attractive or that she's into.
Oh, it's such a turnoff, right?
Yeah, because she's so big about him being,
the power.
Being the power, exactly. And, it, you know, we've seen that from the daughter, Bring Your Daughter to Work Day, how she was upset that he was letting some little kid walk all over him.
Well, even in this episode, she really enjoyed for the brief moment that Dwight was in power, and she tried to kind of seize some of it for herself, and he was like, oh no, this is all mine, you know, and she, then he put her in charge of the women, you know, and I was just like,
yeah,
and then she got that smile. But that was one of those moments where you can really see that this show probably wouldn't float too great right now in these times, like saying something like that, like, oh, yeah, only the men are worth managing. You can in charge of the women, you know?
Yeah, this was so yeah, talking about that, I'm glad that you brought that up. I had this moment where I kind of was like, how am I meant to feel about this? Because I do agree with what Steve Carell was saying. Mm-hmm. I don't like the word that he chose to use about, you know, in this climate or something like that, because I don't think that it's necessarily that it's a climate. But I do agree that I think it's because right now everybody's nerves are very raw, very frayed, very on edge because of what we're dealing with. But back then, when all of the rest of society wasn't so against these marginalized groups as they are now, and or at least as it feels now, then it's easier to laugh about those things. Whereas now it's not as easy to laugh about those things and feel that it comes from a place of innocence and not feel like your nerves are frayed and fried. And so I agree with Steve Carell, and I don't think that it comes from a place of like, oh, everybody's so PC today. I think what Steve Carell is saying is what I've just said. It's the idea that right now there's so much bad stuff going on for these groups that it's hard to find that kind of thing funny at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree.
A lot of this show, if it was just now created, the like writers and producers would be getting a lot of hate, like on Twitter or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't make the same jokes right now. Like, you can't. I think it's fine looking back and still laughing at it because it was of its time, but it's a much different atmosphere right now. So to round out this episode, we see Michael hug it out, bitch. You can bleep me.
I say that a lot. That's so fun. And I'll even, like, I've used that before after a legitimate argument, like after you sort of reconciled after an argument, and it's like, okay, now it's time to hug it out, bitch.
Isn't it an Entourage reference? I've never seen Entourage, but I think it's an Entourage reference. Yeah.
I should ask my dad. He's seen that show.
Which is really good because Entourage was definitely brought up in this episode. And
Entourage.
Which I also like that. I do that a lot. People are like, what? I basically speak in references now. I'm really sorry for all my friends out there who have to deal with me.
I say that so much. I'm really sorry for all my friends out there who have to deal with me. Just put up with it. Sorry.
So even though Michael decides to say it's okay what Dwight did after his sniveling groveling, we see at the very, very close of the episode that he wasn't quite satisfied, and he made Dwight stand up in the middle of the office with a manila folder with the word liar around his neck.
And he's doing his laundry, right?
And he's doing laundry, yeah. So it's like he didn't quite forgive him. He still needed to punish him in this kind of like, I don't know, Victorian schoolgirl kind of way. Like, yeah. It kind of makes me think of like Jane Eyre, you know?
Oh my gosh, yes. He's wearing a scarlet letter even.
Yeah, basically he's like up there like in the stocks for everyone to pelt fruit at him.
Which it's funny that if Jim was there, he probably would be throwing things at him.
For real. I know, right? Oh, speaking of Jim, before we give out our Dundee this week, I wanted to mention that I really liked the usernames in the Call of Duty. So a couple people have pointed out on various Dunder Mifflin trivia websites that their names are Karen the Jim Slayer.
What?
Yep. And Andy's is here comes trouble.
Ah, good.
And Jim is just Jim Halpert, because I guess he couldn't think of anything because he wasn't that into the game.
Oh my God. But that's like the way that Jim does his birth or his Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
Like, that's so Jim to just do his name as
right,
opposed
as goofy and pranky as he is when it comes to like, all right, now pick a name. He's just like, Jim Halpert.
I'm just Jim Halpert, which that's my name is always my name.
Yeah.
Like I always choose my name for things. So I'm like right there with him on that.
Yeah. I feel it too. Cause I never like anything enough to,
yeah,
to associate my, not my name to it. That's just me anyway.
No, I'm with you. That's probably the best way for me to explain my feels on the situation.
All right, let's give out our Dundee. This week, I wanted to give out the acting the acting award to the cast and crew of The Office musical. And if you can, yes. I really want our listeners to go out and know about this. And that's why I wanted to give this Dundee out, so that maybe if you're in New York or you're around New York or you want to come to New York and just get some tickets, you can go check it out. They're at theofficemusicalparody.com if you want to get tickets. It was a great show. Like I said in the beginning, I saw it. It was wonderful. All of these folks deserve a Dundee, especially whoever wrote this. I should probably look that up. The musical numbers are really good, and I highly suggest that anyone who's a super fan in The Office should go see this. It is just a really fun thing to do. And yes, so all right, everyone. Oh, yeah. We'll put the link in the show notes so you guys can go and check that out. I hope someone from the show is listening. That would be awesome.
That would be so awesome.
That would be really awesome. I wore my Beats pin. I was kind of hoping. I got to say, I was a little hoping that someone would be like, hey,
Beats,
are you Tiff Arment from
that would be so fun.
I had it deep down in my heart. I was hoping. I was like,
don't know. You just me walking around.
I did see a Patrick Stewart look-alike, but you know. You're famous, I'm famous, let's hang out. No. Not at all. Anyway, everyone, all of you, all at once, come up, take a bow, and accept your Dundee. Yay! So, Micah, you need to come out here. I mean, it's only a hop, skip, and a jump from Chicago, so... really do.
That's never not funny.
See, well, I keep saying it because I really constantly forget where you live.
Yeah,
anyway,
I actually live in New York, so I'll just jaunt on down.
Cool.
Did you pay for the VIP experience?
I didn't. No, I just did regular. Well, it would be different if it were like a VIP experience with like the actual actors from The Office, like, you know. So that's how I felt about it. But but yeah, it was, they were very, very, they wouldn't let you touch the desks. They were like, all the audio, like after the show was over, the stage manager was like, all right,
get out of here.
All the stuff.
Nobody touch anything.
But no, it was really, everyone worked together. Singing was great. It was great. Great. Everyone
great.
Go.
It was great. It was good.
It was great.
Go watch it. Sarah McKenzie Barron, Michael Scott. It was produced by Bob and Tobley McSmith, Right Angle Entertainment. So it doesn't say who wrote it, but they produced it, which could include some writing credits as well. Be sure to check that out. And I just read that the next musical this group is working on is called The Passion of the Teletubbies, and that's awesome.
Nice.
So let's go ahead and say goodbye for today. If you would like to stay in touch with us, you can follow us on Twitter at @tall_beats. You can also become a member of the Incomparable, and you will get some awesome goodies at the end of the year, as well as access to a bootleg feed that includes episodes straight from Skype for some of the shows. And you will get access to a special members-only Slack that includes a channel called The Conference Room, where you can hang out with Tiff and myself. And
Yep, I was posting pictures from my Office musical experience in there just this morning.
Awesome. And there are also, of course, other huge super fans there as well that, you know, share fun stuff. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can do that there. You can also, if you have time, rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. You can also tap that little star button in Overcast if that's where you're listening, and it recommends the show to other people who are followers of yours. So be sure to, you know, check us out in all those places and leave a review if you have some time. We just got some new reviews in that are a lot of fun. And to the listener out there who stole my nickname, Micah Aronian Cheese, I'm so on board with it. That's totally fine. It is a great nickname. So thank you all so much for listening. And we will see you back next week for what episode is it, Tiff?
Grief counseling.
Grief counseling. Oof. Good grief. Am I right?
Yeah. That sounds like fun. Can't wait.